Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Jaden Doye. Jaden is the founder of Prestige Accounting Solutions, where he uses the subscription model to help law firms with accounting, tax planning, and business consulting services. Jaden tells us not only why he bills using subscriptions, but he shares his wealth of knowledge for law firm finances, for standard and innovative legal practices. Thanks to my sponsor, 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found about them from the podcast and you get 10% off, and it really supports the show. For subscriptionseminar.com, I'm taking firms off the waitlist one at a time in the order they signed up, so sign up now to get your spot in line. I'm an active participant in the process of helping you to use the subscription model so I could only work with so many at a time. Thank you for your patience. This podcast is finally getting more traction, so please rate and review it if you haven't already to help others discover the show. And as always, please share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Jaden, my new friend from ABA Tech Show, welcome to the podcast Law Subscribed. Please introduce yourself to my listeners.
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. My name is Jaden Doye. I'm known as the law firm CPA. I own Prestige Accounting Solutions, and as the president, I help law firm owners reach new heights and catch more flights.
All right. I love it. Well, thank you for coming on. Jaden and I met at ABA Tech Show. We were both faculty there, and we were both speaking on subjects that matter a lot to us. So before we even get in to the meat of the interview, since that's how we met, how about you just tell us, what were some of the things you were talking about at Tech Show?
Yes, at ABA Tech Show, I had two sessions, one of them being Billing 101 with Tech. So in that session, we talked about different ways that law firms can use technology to streamline their billing practices. We also went over a lot of different billing lingo that some people may not be privy to, and different workflow strategies that they can use. The other session was tax tips for lawyers. So we talked about, now that we're in a digital age and people are selling digital products, how does that work from a tax perspective? And how does it work when you are having contractors across state lines? How does it work when you have contractors overseas? How does it work when you primarily operate your business overseas? And how does it work when it pertains to actually selling courses? Do you have to pay sales tax? And one of the most interesting topics that we covered during that session was gross receipt tax. So in some states, you have to pay taxes on the gross income received, which is absolutely ridiculous to me. But hey, they make it work.
And I recall, we're getting a little off the topic here, but I recall that when I was going to Washington with ABA leaders for ABA Day, they were looking at changing a tax requirement so that lawyers have to pay taxes on, and just other professionals in general, they have to pay taxes on like receipts for like money potentially earned, though not yet received. What's the remind me about the difference between like the two types of ways you could choose to be taxed as a business, right? You could choose.
Oh, yeah. So there's accrual versus cash basis.
Bingo,
so
right.
Accrual basis means that you recognize income once it's billed, and cash basis means you recognize income once it's received. And
right.
Historically, accrual basis seems to be higher because you don't collect on all the bills.
Right. And especially for lawyers who are billing their time or say contingency, you know, they might win a judgment at trial, but they might not actually collect on that, right? And so like mm-hmm. for certain even that aspect in particular, there were a lot of lawyers that were like, well, we bill so many hours, but then our clients negotiate them and they negotiate down the bill. And so we're not actually collect. But we'll get back to those topics that you talked about at Tech Show, but let's learn a little bit more about Jaden. Jaden, why do you do what you do? And then why lawyers?
Well, why am I an accountant? That goes back to my childhood. So I did not grow up rich and wealthy, and many people that grew up around me would be surprised that I am where I am today, because we grew up middle working class, like barely making it, living paycheck to paycheck. And my high school, people actually called it the jail. That's how bad it was. The windows were skinny like jail. There was fights every week. It was stabbings. It was absolutely ridiculous. It was a zoo, but I made it out, okay? And so as I was in this middle working class, it was so interesting to have people in the same zip code that live in mansions, and then people that within 1 mile, instead of three people living in a 7-bedroom mansion, we have seven people living in a 3-bedroom apartment. And so for me, I just always found the way that people will spend their money to be interesting. And I always was intrigued between behind the mindset of people and what fuels them and what's the difference between that person that makes $1 million and the person that only makes $24,000 a year. Like, what is the different mentality and thought process behind that? So I was always intrigued by that. And then when I went to high school, I took an accounting course, and it was the easiest course I literally ever took in my life. I would be done in 15 minutes, and people would need days to complete their assignment. So at that point, that was the second indicator that I needed to be an accountant. And then I had a teacher who really breathed life into me, and then he confirmed it that accountants make a lot of money. So with those, three green flags, I gave it a go. Major in accounting at in college, and then after graduating with my bachelor's of science in accounting, and mind you, accounting is a 5-year program. We have to get 150 credits. Then I moved to Atlanta, and then worked a series of different accounting jobs between before becoming a certified public accountant myself and starting my own firm. At this point, we're at 4.5 years now.
And so, I can't imagine that it's very relatable for people to have, taken accounting class in high school of all ages, in all age ranges, and be like, "Oh, this is for me." You don't hear that story very often.
No.
I mean, have you along your professional journey, have you met anyone that was kind of like you, or because I to me that is pretty rare.
It's so funny because I don't really ask people that, but I would imagine if I did that some people that are accountants do have a similar story to me. But what I will say is that the world does have a shortage of accountants. So I don't know why necessarily that is. I think that a lot of people just don't know. They have struggles grasping the concept of accounting. But I do believe that there are tens of thousands, if not millions, of people in this country that will be great accountants, but they want to go into other things. And it's unfortunate because we really do have a shortage in this country of accountants.
Yeah, I feel the same way about attorneys. And speaking of attorneys, at some point you decided that this was a niche worth focusing on,
Yes.
and for your practice, but also enough that you're talking to lawyers at events like ABA Tech Show. So why did you make that decision?
Well, in my first year of business, I knew that I needed to pick a niche in general and become an expert. And so I started with five different industries, and then every industry I would do a marketing campaign, I would do a series of different conversations with people in the industry. And then from there, measure the results to determine if it was the right fit for me. And so over that time process, I realized that law firms were the ones that I related to the most. And I noticed that there were so many people that were great in the courtroom, but they were still doing their IOLTA accounting on a spreadsheet, which is prone to so many human errors. And, with one human error on a trust account, that could cost you your license. And so at that point, being a licensed professional myself, I understood the importance of making sure that your finances are in order so you can keep your license. So at that point, I decided to focus on law firm owners. There was definitely a need for me in the market. Very few accounting firms specialize in working with law firms. And it makes sense because it's rather difficult, but I enjoy puzzles. It's difficult in theory of like accounting, right? But and I had to get through my own mindset block because I dealt with some attorneys that were like not nice. They were the worst. And so I had I was fearful in the beginning, but then when I realized that that was an isolated event, those attorneys were trash on their own, and not everyone is like that. And now that I'm the owner of the business versus working under someone else, I have the jurisdiction. I have the power to say whether I'm going to work with you or not. And now I have a rule. I don't work with people I don't like. So if I get a little inkling that this attorney wants me to do something that's unethical, that's going to cost me my license, thank you for your time. Have a great day. I'm not a good fit. But most people, which is coincidental, most people don't want to get too close to the line. And they want to make sure that they're in the clear, which makes it great for me because they have the right mindset to work with me.
Right. Well, I wish it, there were more only isolated events of attorneys being a-holes, but I think all the listeners to this show know that that's not a reality. I think most of my listeners formerly worked for somebody else before starting their own practice, or are thinking about it right at this very moment that they're listening to this episode. So, I mean, there's just a lot of great takeaways there, just in general from a business perspective of like focusing in on one thing and starting broad, casting a wide net, and then narrowing down on something that you're interested in. But even that, some of these topics that you're talking about are go even beyond the IOLTA count, right? You're talking about streamlining billing practices. I mean, that, if somebody's listening to this podcast, they're already in that kind of mindset. Like, they're looking for those kind of solutions. So let's go back to that. I mean, you can't hear all of Jaden's talk. We can't spend the whole episode him going through his presentation again. So you got to come to Tech Show or come to the next event to see him. But give us sort of the overview, and so also so attorneys can keep an eye out for when you're next presenting on it. Like, what were some of those at a high level tips that you were giving about streamlining billing practices?
Well, for one, using technology to send out bills in bulk. So, not sending out bills one by one and not mailing them out, not having to lick an envelope and put a forever stamp on the bill. That's one. You'll be surprised, some people still do it. But also using technology to automatically track time to each matter and then bill, do your billing more than once. Because if you think about it, if you only bill somebody once a month and this bill is going to be some sporadic amount, they have no idea how to guesstimate how much that bill is going to be, especially if you have a high hourly rate, then that person will most likely need time to pay that bill. And that will delay your cash flow. You want people to pay you as soon as they get the bill. And so, in order to do that, what I suggested doing was to bill maybe twice a month. Every other Friday, but be consistent with it, but don't let 500 hours accumulate before you send out a bill to somebody. Because when you send that $5,000 bill out to somebody, good luck getting a payment if they weren't expecting that bill.
All the more reason why, if you're listening and you haven't been convinced that billing your time is not the best way to make money, there you go. There are some great reasons why.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
so I look forward to hearing your future talks, Jaden, where you're encouraging attorneys to use the subscription model and listen to Law Subscribed on how to do that. The next concept I see more and more of these days, which is, you were talking about the contractors, whether that's in other states or overseas, also known as virtual assistants in a lot of different ways, right? So more and more lawyers, there are even platforms where it's like just virtual assistant agencies for lawyers specifically, where people in like Manila or other countries are trained on US legal jargon so that they could be, what's the term? It's like arbitrage, for so it costs you less, to then hire somebody local, right? So really hot topic right now. So again, sort of same thing. We can't give the whole presentation here on a 45-ish minute podcast episode, but at a high level, what were some of the takeaways there?
High level, don't worry about creating a 1099 for somebody that's not a US citizen. That was one of the hot topics. Definitely record I support using virtual assistants, especially for low-level admin work. But as far as the taxability is concerned, that was the biggest hot topic, whether they live overseas or not. But then some people, they use virtual assistants that live in the United States. So then the question becomes, what state do they live in and what state do you operate out of? So, for example, a lawyer based out of New Jersey, they also practice in Pennsylvania and New York. When they hire the person of Pennsylvania, they need to get a withholding number in the state of Pennsylvania because the payroll taxes will need to be withheld for the state of Pennsylvania. So that is something that is case by case, but it could get complicated for firm owners that aren't familiar with payroll.
And one of the themes of Law Subscribed is also, focus on your zone of genius too, right? And so outsourcing is really important. This is something that we should be telling our clients. Don't do it yourself legal. And with a affordable, predictable subscription model, you don't have to, right? But the same thing is true of whatever it is, your marketing, your website, your accounting, how do you worry about taxes across state lines when you're hiring somebody? So I think the obvious answer is how do you solve this problem is to hire Jaden. But so problem solved there. But I still to better understand, a little bit more, I want to talk about something else that you're talking about. Because again, outsourcing to VAs is part of that, right? So outsourcing to VAs is something that if you're trying to be as efficient with your time as possible because you're not billing your time, well, I haven't gotten there yet. Hiring a VA is certainly on my product roadmap of how I want to operate my firm. Selling a course. Other really interesting topic, right? Because when you're a subscription attorney, one of the things that people ask me all the time is, well, what about criminal attorneys? You don't want to have a criminal subscribing you to keep them out of prison or jail. Like that seems to be like the wrong sort of incentive there. And my response has been, well, what you could do is you could build a course and you could say, here's how you comply with probation. And after you've gotten them off, you could sell them a course, right? Now, of course, I'm just saying this, being a subscription expert problem solver. Not considering the tax consequences of what selling a course actually is, but there's a lot of productization opportunities for lawyers. And so maybe even speak a little bit more about that. And is that a jurisdiction specific, type of situation with state tax versus federal tax? And like, how would that type of a thing work?
Well, most of the time we're talking about a digital product, so they're not necessarily having to pay sales tax unless they're in those states that require gross receipt tax. So the biggest thing that it does is it just increases your gross taxable income. But often, and that's something that you'll need to effectively plan for. And a lot of times people will run those type of products out of a different entity that's not their law firm. And so there's just a level of tax planning as it pertains to that, depending on what type of, if it's a single member LLC, if you're going to be taxed as an S corp, those type of things need to be put into place when you're scaling a course selling business or digital product business, which can happen rather quickly.
And so that would be even in my talk at ABA Texture on the subscription model, I got a question about that. Well, should my course or my legal products that I'm selling, should that be a totally separate entity? And I said, well, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. So what about like a hybrid model? So like let's say there's an attorney who wants to offer like a product, like a digital product like you're talking about, but as part of that purchase price, it also includes legal consultation. So it's like a hybrid. It's like a hybrid digital product and still consultations. Like, is there like a way? And this is uncharted territory in a lot of ways, right? And so it's hard to know. And so no financial advice is given in this conversation. But I'm asking the expert, the law firm's CPA, because I have him here on my podcast. At least your thoughts about it, initial thoughts, are if I'm offering like a course that includes consultations as part of that course. It includes, consulting, legal consulting. At what point does it become more of a digital product than like a traditional law firm model? And then how do you think, or how does it look like the tax laws are shaping up in that way that, I'll have to, I should spin it off, or maybe I shouldn't even use consulting advice at all, and I should just really keep them 100% separate. Have you seen any of these hybrid models yet?
Yeah, so even my firm, we have a hybrid model, but you're saying a course with a consultation as an add-on versus the other way around. Most people are usually going to lead with, well, it depends. Actually, it depends, right? So for us, we do not only accounting and consulting, but we have a series of courses as a value add for the client. So we really don't sell the courses standalone. That's not what I'm leading with. But if the course is something that you're leading with, then that sounds like the consultation is just a add-on. So it really depends on which product or service you're actually leading with when it pertains to which and if it should be kept in the same entity or not.
That's a really great point, because I see, just in terms of opportunity here, is small shops like myself to be competing with LegalZooms, where maybe a freelancer wants to buy a template of a consulting agreement or something like that. They might not want the legal advice that comes along with that. They might just want the template. But then giving them optionality to add on actual legal advice, to that template based upon a situation, it might be easier to sell from just a marketing standpoint, sell the template instead of selling the legal advice first. So it might be harder to go that way.
Well, then you just have to be comfortable knowing that everything that's going to be ran through your law firm is going to be can be looked at under a microscope by various different jurisdictions. So if you don't want to mix that up, then I do have clients that do this. I have clients that have their law firm, but then they also have their digital products. They have their digital product business where they don't provide legal advice, but they will consult with the client. Now, if they want to retain that person after that consultation for legal, then they run it through, they go through a whole different system and they run it through the law firm. But it's just important to be very intentional with our words and make sure we make clear to what the clients need. It's very similar to even therapists. A lot of therapists are realizing I'm getting burnt out only doing $85 a session from Medicare when I could be getting paid $500 a session if I just call it coaching. And I don't have to be under the jurisdiction of these licensing boards and things of that nature.
Yeah, I myself have certainly looked into how to do legal consulting versus legal advice, right? I mean, you look at, the sports industry or the entertainment industry, and you have agents, many of whom are often attorneys, but they're not legal counsel for, the talent. They are agents, and they have a contract that designates, and gives power of attorney to the agent to do things. And they're using their legal mind to consult with them, but they're not giving legal advice, which seems like a very thin line.
No, it makes sense. Like even as a CPA, certified public accountant. So this skill set that I have could be used for public companies, but I take this skill set and I use it for law firms and get them in the mindset of thinking as if they had a public company. If you were a owner of a public company, you would be sure to look at those finances every month. There's certain KPIs that you would look for every month. And if something wasn't working, then you'd be more likely to cut it than to keep it.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. So speaking of KPIs and speaking of some of the things that you do for law firms, I had the pleasure of going through the sign-up process in order to know what it's like for our interview today. And you have something called the CLIMB methodology. So again, this is something that clients of yours get access to, but at a high level, talk about that unique methodology and what does that do and how does that help your client?
Absolutely. So what I use a climb methodology to help my clients increase their profits without burning out. So most people have been taught the thought process that in order to make a lot of money, you got to work a lot of hours, and that's not necessarily the case. And so there's five core areas to which we focus in helping our clients optimize. The first one being cash flow. So we want to make sure that there's more cash inflows than outflows. So providing them with their financials on time every month, going through the general ledger with them to make sure that things are categorized correctly, but also advising them on how they can increase revenue and decrease expenses, and implementing a method called profit first so that they're always setting money aside for profit and taxes. Then we have the L of Climb, which stands for leadership. So we want to make sure that our clients are hiring profitably and that their employees are actually helping them to their bottom line. So I'll give you an example. A client is hiring either a business development manager or a non-attorney salesperson. So we help the client develop KPIs to which they can hold that person accountable. So if you're paying somebody a $60,000 salary, how many leads should they be bringing in? How many people should they be closing? Things of that nature. And what should their salary be? So we help them analyze the market to figure out what their salary should be. And then if they need help with bonus structures, we help them develop that as well. Then when it comes to I, we're looking at information technology and systems. So making sure that they're implementing systems and technology instead of doing everything manually. So if you're using Clio, let's figure out where you need to use it more so that you can save time, okay? A lot of people are just like, for instance, I helped somebody today actually who they have a bunch of team members and their team members are kind of just doing things on their own schedule and they really have no control over everything. So I helped them develop a plan for their office manager to put all of the outstanding tasks into their management system. And then with every outstanding case, rather, all of the subtasks, they need to have a task template. And then every day, every morning, the first thing that goes out is a report with what all the outstanding cases are and the work that needs to be done. So that's where we help them on the IT and system side. On the marketing and branding side, we make sure that they are marketing profitably. So if you're putting $5,000 a month into Facebook ads, I want to see the numbers. How many leads are you getting and how much revenue are you getting? And then on the business organizational side, we make sure that they have the policies in place to streamline their business, financial policies especially. But if they need some type of SOPs or templates or things of that nature to help with the training process, we help them with that because a lot of people have issues when they have a new employee. They don't get the return on investment for 90 days. And I don't believe in that. I think you should get the return on investment within the first 30 days.
Hey, you heard it here, folks. 30 days on ROI. Man.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I just hired a senior accountant 60 days ago and I told her straight up, this is what I'm looking for. This is how many hours we're expecting from you per quarter. We give you unlimited PTO, but these are the results that I'm looking for.
Right.
And yeah, I keep, I make sure that I get the results that I want.
Yeah, and it's easier to practice what you preach when you're preaching it and you're doing it. So good incentives there built in. Yeah, and so I'm a fan of the methodology, of course, because especially with the C part, if you have a well-developed subscription model, even a flat fee subscription model for your business, that's going to be a heck of a lot easier for you to predict your income versus cash flow coming in versus spend going out. And measuring ROI is also one of these big things that attorneys they just rely on their gut feeling for things. If their Google ad spend, is a good return on investment, they're not actually looking at numbers sometimes. They're thinking about how they feel so that you're helping clients actually measure return on investment for their marketing spend. That's, you don't hear the marketing companies helping with that because they just want them to spend more. And sure, they help. They want you to spend more because they want you to see results, but their results are things they're incentivized to show you results that make you stay with that marketing company versus coming from your accountant. That's a different story, right? So I see a lot of value there, and that's very cool that you're offering this. So on top of everything, right? So you yourself have a subscription business. So the services that you offer are a subscription business. And now that's what I want to talk with you about is of all the business models you could have used, why the subscription model?
Well, to me, it doesn't make sense for me to charge hourly when the hour that I have at 9 o'clock after I first have my coffee is not going to be as productive as the hour of work that I do at 5 or 6 o'clock. It's just not realistic. So it doesn't make sense. Also, it's easier for me to bill. And it's easier, honestly, it's easier to get clients because clients know from day one what to expect as it pertains to their expense. And we already have a bad reputation. You know, there's this negative stigma around lawyers charging so much per hour and accountants charging so much per hour. When in reality, if they're still charging by the hour, they need to be honest about the blended rates. Or either have a blended rate or have a step model. I'm not paying a paralegal $500 an hour. That doesn't make sense. I'm only paying an attorney $500 an hour because the attorney should be done at 15 minutes and the paralegal should be doing most of the work realistically. So in my business, it just makes it easier. And because because I have a pretty strict niche market at this point, I already know it's rinse and repeat. I could do this with my eyes closed. Mm-hmm. So I already know the profit margin that I'm going to reach. I already know what it will take to do the work in the beginning. We're really good with projections as it pertains to hours for projects and things of that nature. So it's just a good transaction for both parties.
Hey, you know, you heard it here. Like, I feel like you could take all of that and apply to legal professionals and try to get the same result. Of course, it begs the question then, how was it that you figured out how to be efficient and do the things so you knew how long it was going to take you at first? And of course, you want to create more efficiency so it takes you less time to get the same result, because when you're not billing your time, that's what you're incentivized to do. Then you end up making more money for you're spending less time and you're charging the same amount. But how did you get there? Like, was it mentorship? Was it just your years of experience before starting your own practice? Like how did you get there? Because even though it's a different subject matter, I still feel like it could be a similar process for legal professionals. Because that's a question I got. Well, I just graduated from law school. Can I go solo and can I use a subscription model? How do I know how long something's going to take me? So like, how was it that you got there? Share your experience with that.
Well, I know a lot of people are not going to agree with me on this, but I don't believe in the thought process of going into business, doing something like what we do straight out of school, only because there's so much oversight that happens when you work a job. So getting some of that on the job experience and even seeing how they operate a business was very important to me. And it really streamlined the process for me. I was able to do flat fees in my first year of business because of my years of experience working at a CPA firm, because of my years of experience doing accounting cleanup work. I was way underpriced when I first started. And so, you know, through coaching, I developed a new pricing model where now I attract a different caliber of client, and I feel like there's less headaches on both parties. So that really helped me. And then I also with being able to do things more efficiently, we're able to incorporate more software and provide more value to our clients. So we didn't just increase the price just because, oh, know your worth. I know they say that. But I also increased the price because the value of what we were delivering to our clients increased.
Right. So to continue on with the subscription model that you offer, you have three tiers. You have basic economy, business class, first class firms.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you're coming up with the terminology for a subscription model, you know, it's very like you could see where you derived that from. That's like you're sitting on an airplane, right? You got basic, you got business, and you got first class, right? So that's you. Right. You're inspired by that, right?
Yes. I'm known. Everyone used to call me the traveling CPA. Because I'm known for taking a business trip at least once a month. So it just made sense. It just goes with the theme. And I also, in my business, help people reach new heights and catch more flights. Mm-hmm. So it just made sense to name the packages after that.
Right. Branding. branding, baby. It's all about branding and having a consistent message. So, you know, some people look at like the plus, right? Like there's Disney Plus, there's all these plus now put, you know, onto things. So I've started to see for other subscriptions using plus, not yet in legal services, but I'm sure we're going to see it, right? So wherever it is you get your inspiration from, you're going to get it from somewhere. But you picked three. Why three?
You know, it just makes sense. And, you know, I read a lot of business books and I do a lot of business development, and there seems to just be on trend, the ongoing theme. And it just makes sense, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that's good intuition, or at least derived intuition through consumption of a lot of information, because that tends to be the rule of thumb. Right. And there is research for subscription models backing this up that don't go more than three options at a time. Right. Even just in whatever sort of marketing plan that you have. You know, if you give somebody one option, it's yes or no. So you got to give them at least two so they can make a choice between what you offer. But when you start getting more than three, it starts to get, you know, it starts to go too far out there. So thinking, I realizing that your clients are attorneys, sort of in the more abstract, like what has been, compared to when you used to, you know, bill time versus your flat fee work compared to your subscriptions, what has been your clients' opinion on the subscription model as compared to clients' opinions and some of the other ways that you used to bill?
Oh, they love it. They love the subscription model because it automatically comes out of their account in the middle of the month. So it's not fighting with rent or mortgage or anything like that. And then I don't really have dispute, like fee disputes. Like, you know, when you charge hourly, then there's a, well, did it really take you that many hours? Or then the question becomes, if you mess something up and you have to clean it up, are you really going to charge the client? I mean, that happened to me as a consumer, and I had to fire an attorney because of that. So, you know, I think people love the, when I present it to them, they love the idea of the flat fee model. It's to a lot of people at first, it's a little higher than they expect. But when I break down the value of what they're getting, and if you paid me hourly, how you would not be able to afford me, it just makes sense to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in a way, they think it's expensive, but it's actually more affordable than you really think.
I agree. I completely agree. So thinking about, since you're also very tech forward and data driven and all of that, what is some of the technology that you're using to power your business?
So I want to talk about some things that I don't think a lot of people talk about, and that's having a virtual firm. So for me, we make sure that any new employees, that they actually get a computer from us. That computer already has spyware, you know, anti-spyware on the computer. Then we all use a remote desktop. So we use Cloudera for our remote desktop. So anytime they're working on prestige work, they do so on the remote desktop. Then we use ActiveTrack to monitor their activity. So in the event that something goes wrong, there's a hack, I can see the screenshots through ActiveTrack. I can also see how long someone's working so we can measure productivity. And that's a report that we look at every Monday. That's very important for me. For our client communications and portal and practice management, there's a software called Canopy Tax, specifically for accounting firms. And it's very similar to a Clio. Where they have their client portal and you have your projects and things of that nature. I think those are the main ones that I wanted to. Oh, and of course, for accounting, we use QuickBooks Online.
Of course. And I'm curious because I don't, at least I don't think that the subscription model is used for accountants the way that, like very commonly the way you're using it. So is that practice management software that you're using, is that how you're powering your subscriptions, or do you have to use an API or some other technology to power the monthly recurring charges, or is that something you could integrate with QuickBooks? Like, how are you doing that?
Yeah, we do all the billing and recurring billing and contracts through our practice management software, Canopy Tax. Yeah. So they're able to sign their contract. We're able to do the recurring billing, take their money, all of that, all in one platform.
Right, right. I really think there's only two platforms for lawyers that are making that easy to do. Technically three, because Fidu integrates with Clio. So like you can be using Clio and then Fidu integration to power that, right? So I mean, very cool that you're able to just handle that. And then for scheduling, you're automating your scheduling too. What app are you using for that? Or is that part of the software as well?
No. So, well, yes and no. So when they have their client portal and the link is there for them to book a call. Now they also, we use Schedule Once or OneHub for scheduling. Mm-hmm. And so every month we send out the reminder to schedule your monthly appointment. And we usually do that. We like to stack our calls. So we focus the last 2 weeks of the month for current clients. And we focus the first 2 weeks of the month to do month end for clients and for sales.
Right, right. And a lot of that can be automated in the software. I use Calendly, and I know you could automate who can and can't schedule time with you during certain periods.
Oh, but catch this on the terms of automation. So in the Canopy Tax are all of our projects, right? So on the monthly bookkeeping project, we set up an automation where there's like 8 steps. So one of the steps is CPA review. After the CPA review subtask is marked completed, the client automatically gets an email that says, this is the automated email letting mm-hmm. you know that your monthly bookkeeping has been reviewed. It'll be in your portal in 1 to 2 business days, and use this call to review your general, to book a call to review your general ledger. So that's something that we have incorporated, trying to trigger certain emails to be sent out to clients for certain things. And then when it comes to client requests, we can set the system to remind the client every day for 15 days to upload something, so we don't have to constantly bother them and they don't have to call us a week later saying what's the status of something, when they will continue to get that reminder email until they actually send us what we need, and then they mark it as complete in their on their side of the portal.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big advocate of client portal uses in general, especially for all the automations you could set up. Last question about the technology, the scheduling software, the client portal, QuickBooks, all the other software you're using. All charges you a subscription, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So with that, I have just one more question for you that I normally reserve for attorney guests, mm-hmm. But this is something that I also want to ask you as well. So ABA data on the profession has shown that even though there are more women and more attorneys of color going to law school than ever before, your big law leadership and even just employee count does not quite match the women or attorneys of color practicing at those institutions. And I found, conducting this podcast, that the attorneys who are most innovative in alternative billing fees are women and attorneys of color who are now able to serve communities who look and are more like them. So I think the subscription model is a solution to that problem that big law poses to women and attorneys of color. So my question for you is, do you think it is as well? And why is that? And what could we do better as a profession?
I think that it's part of it, but it's not the actual solution, only because it's so deep rooted as to why the demographics are the way that they are. It's a general mindset about who's at the top. You have to remember, most of these people that are at the top of big law, they're 65, right? And 2023 minus 65, that gives us 1958. So most of these people grew up in the 60s. Jim Crow was just abolished not too long before that. Mm-hmm. So you have to remember that we are still recovering from the results of racism in this country, right? Mm-hmm. So if their mindset is stuck in their ways and they're like, hard work gets the work done, you know, you have to work like a dog in order to get good things in life. If that's the mentality that they're bringing into these environments, then it's not going to be conducive to people of color and women, because that's not like that. That doesn't make sense to us, and we're realizing that that's not the way to go anymore.
Right, and their mindset is closed with, you have to bill your time, and that's the only way we can make money in this profession.
Right, and honestly, I think a lot of firms bill hourly because it's so up and down. And that's because you're casting a wide net. You're not really, you're are you really an expert at something? You know, because if you were really an expert and you then you would be better, you would be able to better estimate how long it would take. You could do your flat fee. You can even do a subscription to a certain aspect up to so many hours, right? But because they're stuck in their ways and every case is different per se, it's not going to change. And I see a lot of people actually just did an event for DE&I where we were talking about how to have an inclusive work environment. And a lot of people of color had the same story that I did, where you worked at a place where you're the only person of color and you were discriminated against. I mean, I've been called a monkey at work. I've been called the N-word at work. And a lot of us that started our own firms didn't really have much of a choice because there's not really open, inclusive environments. And so I think the billable hour is a part of that part patriarchy, but it's not the solid reason as to why women of color, women and people of color don't enjoy working in big law.
And you raise a really good point in how when you're treated like that, it's a no wonder that they have terrible retention for diversity at big law. But I find it fascinating that when those attorneys leave, they don't continue to bill by the hour. They are innovating in so many ways that they're not able to when they're in that big law environment. And that's what we've seen. And I stand on their shoulders, you know, as a subscription attorney myself.
Yeah, it's traumatizing to work in that type of environment with the pressure of billable, having to do X amount of billable hours. Now, we do flat fee, but we still require X a certain amount of hours per quarter, billable hours per se. But that's only because I know in order for these projects to flow the way that I need them to flow, I need you to work at certain amount of hours. So, but we don't, it's really no pressure, honestly. Because they end up, there's always work.
And when you could
And
find more efficient ways to do something, then you
right.
could take on more clients or you could fill those
Yes.
hours doing with other productive work.
Yes. And I in accounting firms, we have the same issue with the thought process of, you know, working 12 hours a day. It really doesn't make any sense because after 40 hours a week, your productivity starts to go down. So for me, I have an unlimited PTO policy and flexible hours at my firm. And the more flexible I am with people, I actually get better client, I mean, employee performance. I've had people working at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 6 a.m., 5 a.m. Because I'm giving them the ability to pick up their kids and drop off their kids, they're more loyal to the company.
Right, 100%. And there could be a lot said there with the way that you charge your clients that also allows you to do that for your employees. The last question I have for you is why everybody comes to the show, and that is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
I would say yes. Anytime it's meat in between two pieces of bread, it's a sandwich. So, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Said confidently. Jaden, thanks so much for coming on the show. If any of my listeners want to follow up with you, what are the websites? Where are the social media handles? Where could they find you?
Yes. So, the best way is to connect with me on Instagram at the great Jaden. If you're not on Instagram, you can find me on LinkedIn, Jaden Doyer. You know, a lot of people say, I want to learn more about your services. Okay, so I'm going to tell you quick in 30 seconds. You provide accounting, tax prep, tax planning, and business consulting services. And we do it all in a bundled rate. And if you reach out to me, we can have a consultation and talk more about it.
All right, great. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find a value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.